of the crop.
Welcome to the 180th edition of the Gooner Podcast. This is your host, Kevin Witcher. And we are back after a month's break due to my struggling to convene a panel last time around. So apologies to those of you who missed us. We are recording this on Tuesday evening after Arsenal's win against West Ham. And the chances are most of you will be hearing this after the rescheduled match at Manchester City, which kicks off about 24 hours after this. Anyway, let's discuss what we are now about, which is the last 2 months at Arsenal. But before we do, the usual panel introductions. First up, it is a pleasure to welcome back one of our regulars, who was last able to get along in October, before work commitments counted him out of Tuesday evenings over the duration of the winter. But with spring in the air, he's reappeared like a bunch of daffodils, although fortunately, his skin tone is different from said flowers, so we can cross jaundice off the list of potential ills. We haven't tested any of the panel for coronavirus, though, so here's hoping there's a clean bill of health for everyone both here and listening in. With that, it is a heartfelt welcome back to Mr. David Udo.
Hello there. Very lengthy intro, thank you.
Yeah, I felt inspired this afternoon. Next, a man who is becoming a semi-regular panellist, and my thanks to him for being able to step in at short notice after we had a dropout over the weekend. A one-time Arsenal shareholder, a long-term Gooner contributor, and a man who can produce a piece with an exact word count if required. Which means it's never a struggle fitting in his articles in our print version. It's a very good evening to the master of precision, Mr. Bernard Dowling.
Hello, everyone.
And last but never least, he's found a gap in his busy schedule to join us this evening for the second time this season. A long-running Gooner columnist and a man who experienced the match day delights of club level for the first time against West Ham last weekend and apparently ordered 3 glasses of free red wine at half-time. I have no words aside from that to say I'm pleased he made it here in one piece, although whether the same can be said of his liver, I simply cannot say. A beacon of controversial opinion, if not health. It's always a pleasure to say hello to the Highbury Spy himself, Mr. Steve Ashford.
You know me too well, Ken.
I certainly do. And I missed you on Saturday in Block 111.
But, I know. Last time I'm going to club level anyway.
Well, you know, if you get the invite, you know.
I don't mind the half-time wine, but we were behind the goal and the view was nowhere near as good as it is.
Yes, I've noticed that myself, actually. Yeah. So there you go. They're paying a lot more money than we are.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah. And our seat's better.
And then all you get is cheap red wine, I'll tell you. What is the point? Anyway, let's get on to matters a little more pertinent to our audience than our indulgence. And a chap who used to be on this podcast quite regularly, Mr. Mark Ollington. And we're going to start off with Arteta. And Mark tweets, apart from being better in press conferences, having cleaner hair and less yellow teeth, does Mikel Arteta really offer much different to Unai Emery? The football seems the same and we are punching above our weight. Brackets like Emery's unbeaten run last season. If you believe in the expected goals, which presumably suggest we shouldn't have got the points we have secured. At times it has looked familiar, I have
Saturday
to say that.
In particular.
Yes.
Flirting around the edge of a box like a kinky 17-year-old.
Yes, indeed.
I thought Saturday's performance was more like an Emery performance than any of the other previous Arteta games.
But surely it should be the opposite. Surely they should be moving away from Emery the more games they play.
I don't know whether the leg's gone or whether it's tactical. But the first 2 or 3 home games under Arteta, we were pressing, we were battling for every ball, we were fighting. There was a noticeable change from the way that Emery lined the team up. That kind of could be construed to be the new manager bounce, although we didn't get too many wins when we were doing that. Should have beaten Chelsea. Unfortunately, we didn't because of that Leno muck-up, but we were the better team that day and should have won. But since then, that pressing seems to have gone and we've regressed a little. And me personally, I'm beginning to think that some of the players that some of the fans quite like, Arteta doesn't seem to fancy.
Right.
And that's a bit of a worry.
Okay.
Yeah. I think the best performance since Arteta's taken over was Manchester United at home. And you talked about pressing. Mm. We did press very well that day. Mm. Sadly, it hasn't happened since to the same extent. Mm. You know, we've had good parts of games. You know, you mentioned the Chelsea home game. Mm-hmm. The first 35 minutes, absolutely excellent. Chelsea then came back into the game for the last 10 minutes of the first half. And I would say they were Chelsea probably with the better team in the second half.
We defended very deep, didn't we, second half? We were knackered.
But what I will give Arteta some credit for is we do appear more defensively secure these days. I mean, to be fair, he even got Mustafi playing pretty damn well. You know, I thought in his last game, Mustafi was excellent. But yeah, overall, I am more positive about Arteta's performance, even though I don't think we've picked up the points that we should have done. And, you know, the home game against that we got knocked out, the Champions League. Olympiacos at home. That was a disaster.
Yeah. See, I've got this theory about Arteta where I kind of mentioned or touched on the fact that there's players that I think would improve the team, but he doesn't seem to rate. One of them is Guendouzi.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of Guendouzi.
I'm a huge Guendouzi fan. Yeah. He's a warrior. He's got pace. He covers every blade of grass. Yeah. He's a defender. He's a forward. You know, some people say, well, I don't know what he is, but he's all those things. He does them all quite well.
He gives us so much.
Yeah. When he doesn't play, like he didn't play against Olympiacos, we were dull, slow, leaden, no pace. Saturday didn't come on. Yeah. Saturday didn't play.
Did he come on in the 2-2 at Chelsea, or did he start that game? I can't remember.
I think he started that game.
You think he started that game?
Yeah. And that game was tailor made for him. I'd love to see him start tomorrow at City.
Yeah.
I really hope he does. Especially since Torreira's out. But I reckon if Arteta wants to help himself, he should build the midfield around Guendouzi.
Yeah, I'd agree with that completely.
There's a lot of talk in the papers today that he's already been signed off as leaving in the summer as the manager doesn't fancy him. I mean, you've got to remember, he's been relegated to the bench. And he's like a rabid greyhound waiting to get out. Because whereas all the other Premier League teams, the top six over the last 10 years, have had one of those players who everyone else calls the wanker, the one that you hate the most, because his job is coming on, getting away with like 15 fouls before he gets booked. The last one we had was Grimaldi. That's how long ago we're talking. And Guendouzi's the wanker we've been after. Mm. And that's his role. So it's like, as we did with Grimaldi. I personally think his role now is half an hour to go, actually, you know, 20 minutes to go, only a one goal lead, you know, bring him on just to, you know, kick the fuckers, you know.
Get one yellow card.
Exactly, yeah. You know, get injured a couple of times and roll around. I mean, that's one thing that I don't like it from a traditional point of view, but, you know, the football that I grew up loving in the late 20th century is dead, and now cheating is existing. And in fact, we now make tactical fouls when teams are breaking away rather than just trying
it's
to win.
It's called game management.
Quite. Yeah. I mean, we've now got a manager who's learned that from Guardiola, who did it perfectly.
Well, Barcelona, I think very cynical.
Yeah. I mean, you look at players like Busquets, Fernandinho at Manchester City. Mm. Maybe Guendouzi could be that long term. But
I think Guendouzi is pretty good at game management. And if we were stupid enough to sell him in the summer, it would definitely be our loss and someone else's game.
Yeah.
Without a shadow of a doubt.
Absolutely.
Especially if we keep Willock instead.
Well, the thing I think with Guendouzi, it may be personality, okay? Yeah. Because Arteta does have his non-negotiables, and one of them might be an element of respect.
Yeah.
And you can tell he's a bit of a tearaway, you know? But the other thing is Arteta likes tidy players who generally will keep it simple and play.
That's all well and good.
Play passes which are not going to lose possession. Guendouzi does lose possession a lot.
But he's only 20. Surely that can be coached out of him. If Pepe only having one foot can be coached out of him, I'm sure maybe
Arteta is trying to coach out of him and getting resistance.
If you think about it, Xhaka's not losing the ball as often. He's still losing it, don't get me wrong. But compared to when he was the midfield general in the way that Emery set up his 4-2-3-1, he's going into, not as good as it, but going into Gilberto role now. I mean, I've noticed a lot recently is that playing Saka at left back is him darting forward and him Aubameyang on the left. Xhaka flips in left back straight away as he used to do when Ashley Cole was going on a runner, and it's working quite well. You know, being simple and deadly effective and following the manager's instructions. Whereas, as you say, Guendouzi is a bit of a tearaway.
I'm going to ask you this now. I'm going to ask you all your first choice central midfield pairing.
Guendouzi and Ceballos.
Okay.
Guendouzi and Torreira.
Torreira and Ceballos.
Interesting. Not one of you said Torreira and Xhaka.
For 10 weeks. We can't put Torreira in.
If everyone was fit, okay. But what was interesting there was no one said Granit Xhaka.
No, because he's the one that slows us down.
No, but
he's the one that turns us into Unai Emery.
I think Xhaka has. He's definitely got a role to play, and I think he plays it quite well.
But not at home games against West Ham.
Well, I mean, this is the thing. This is the thing about Arteta football, isn't it? It is possession is king, and you don't play percentage balls.
Yeah. Or I'd like to see Arsenal play with a lot more pace. We didn't play with pace under Emery, and we're reverting to not playing with pace now under Arteta.
Yeah.
We did at the beginning when he gave Nelson his head and put Nelson in, Pepe on the other wing. And we were playing with a lot more pace when Arteta first came. Now we seem to have reverted to the previous regime's type of football with Xhaka, Aubameyang on the left wing, no pace down the middle, Nelson not playing.
Nelson's been injured.
But I think any Arsenal team without Xhaka in it will play with more pace.
Right, okay. Let's just discuss that whole idea of getting the ball forward at pace. Because one of the things that has become noticeable is rather like Unai Emery, you know, Lino will play it short. But my personal bone of contention is if Lino's going to play the ball out, he's got to do it bloody quickly. Otherwise, you might as well hoof it up and play the percentages. Because otherwise, you're just inviting the other team to get set and pressure your defenders. So, on that note, remembering that Guardiola didn't work out first year at City and he ended up changing his keeper. Claudio Bravo was the guy in first season and he got in Edison and then started winning titles. Do you think that Arteta is going to persist with Bernd Leno as his number one?
I really, really hope so. As a retired goalkeeper myself, I mean, we are looking at the next German international goalkeeper after Neuer. He's an outstanding goalkeeper. The reason why we get put in goal is because we can't actually play football. And that is an unfortunate thing. But remember, these players only have to follow the instructions. Well, they have to follow the instructions they're given by their manager. And they're very slightly different instructions that he's getting from Arteta and he was getting from Emery. And he's getting used to himself.
Yeah.
And whilst I agree with you completely, he's got to play it quickly. But it's not as though he's got like two players gasping for the ball, is it? I mean, so everyone's got to readapt to this as well.
Do you think that Arteta is asking Lino to play in a slightly different way now? Dominate his area more, come for more high balls?
Well, we're talking
more as a sweeper. Because he seems to be doing that, actually.
Well, you can only play as a sweeper if, you know, the centre-halves are playing so far up. Yeah. You know, there's so much space. And as we saw with Edison on Sunday for Man City, it doesn't work all the time. He's got to follow in the steps of Neuer and Ten Stegen for the German national team. He has got a sweep. Mm. I mean, that's how it works. Mm. I mean, that's why Czech, you know, with 21st century football, just wasn't going to last as soon as Emery took over. But he's doing his best he can. Mm. But, I mean, the players who he's got to pass to have got to be there waiting, and then the people who they're going to pass to. So if it means we've got to move as a unit, you know, from the goal line all the way up to the opposition penalty area, then so be it.
Lino is a fantastic shot stopper as well. Mm. I think a solid argument could be made that he's been one of our players of the season, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. He has.
I'm just thinking what Arteta wants from his goalkeeper is for his goalkeeper to be an outfield player.
Mm.
You know, and for that to happen, he's got to have the brain of an outfield player, the abilities of an outfield player, the confidence of an outfield player. And as we saw against Olympiacos, he isn't that all the time.
Do you think Martinez is quite a decent footballer, though, Kev, that we'll play the ball out and we'll play a better football from the back than
It was significant against Olympiacos, Martinez wasn't picked.
Martinez.
That's all we need to know. I mean, obviously Arteta doesn't rate him.
But Martinez could put a ball on a sixpence from 20 yards.
Why wasn't he picked against Olympiacos?
I don't know. I'd like to have seen him play a couple of league games this year just to see how good he actually is.
Are you sure you're not talking about Roberto Martinez in terms of someone who can put the ball on a foot from 20 yards?
No, Martinez is a very good kicker-outer.
You've seen a lot more of him than me in that case.
Always has to take anything Steve says with a pinch of salt.
Yeah.
The number of times I sat next to him, heard an opinion for him, and thought maybe there is something in that. Put it in my editorial, and then got shot down in flames. I've learned.
Martinez is a slightly more dominant keeper than Lino, but not such a good shot.
Yeah. He's very dominant. Get on the bench, okay.
Yeah. The bottom line is he's been at the club almost 10 years. Is it 10 years?
You can kill someone whilst you're pissed and driving the car, and he'll get 10 years.
Yeah. You know, I mean, if he was that good. Yeah,
when he goes on the mark, it'll be like Jenkinson, you know. I mean, will it be Sampdoria, will it be Milan, will it be Barcelona or Forest?
Is the trend upwards, though, in terms of since Arteta arrived? You know, there has been optimism, and the fact is, you know, okay, Olympiacos, it did go the shape of a pear, all right, but domestically, you know, since that home defeat at Chelsea, by hook or by crook, this team has not been beaten.
I know, which is amazing.
You know, they've played probably 8 Premier League games.
Yeah, more than that. Much more than that.
Three cup games.
So. There's only one team in the Premier League who's lost less games than us, and they're not invincible.
Right.
Okay.
We've got a lot of draws, is the reason we're so far down the table.
As Bernard says, though, one of Arteta's great achievements is to get players like Mustafi playing really, really, really well.
So this is a mark of progress.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Big time.
They gave everyone a clean slate, in fairness.
Yeah.
And I got the impression, because we, as a collective being Gooners, had given up on Mustafi ahead of last season, as soon as he started to have bad games and Emery decided he was leaving. I mean, I think that was like a pre-decision when he took over. But when Arteta said everyone's got a clean slate, I mean, well, he has ripped up and started again, hasn't he? I mean, because the team he inherited, I mean, the midfielder everyone was talking about was Guendouzi, first name on the team sheet. Whereas, you know, now got a bit lippy in Dubai and, you know, got told off for 2 weeks. As you say, Mustafi looks like a £34 million World Cup winner. Mm. But there we are.
Okay, so, I mean...
So, if Mustafi was fit, would you bring him back for tomorrow night? At City?
Yes, I probably would.
Yeah, I think I would as well.
So you put him in ahead of Mari?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, just wrap up on Arteta. I'm just asking gut feeling about the long term. Is this a manager who, given the time, will deliver a title?
You'll have to, me personally, ask me after the next transfer window, because sadly, that's a massive part in football now. The way he wants us to play, the way he's training us and his training staff, yeah, that seems to be going great, that's fine. But, I mean, the coming in of Cedric and Pablo Mari in January is just a dip in the ocean. And this coming summer will be the first one when Sanjehi and Edu I've actually got proper business to do. I think, I mean, last summer was, you know, make them as it went along, I think. But, I mean, this one, Arteta's going to give them instructions, and if he can get rid of the players he wants to, and he can get in the players he wants to, then I think December next year we can start judging him properly.
Providing those players aren't Mkhitaryan and Willian.
Willian?
Two 32-year-olds who we're...
Are we connected with
linked
Willian?
With.
The Express.
Yes.
I can't see that one happening. Yeah. But the one interesting thing about Arteta in his press conferences, when this subject of players has been raised, is that unlike Emery, who was prepared to be a coach and not get involved in player recruitment, Arteta seems to have very definite preferences on the players that he would like at the club. Good or bad?
Good. Yeah, good. Yeah. He's, to all intents and purposes, the manager. Mm. So that's good to me.
With all due respect, I think that's a bit of a 50-50 thing with respect to yourself, Kev, because, I mean, you look at players like Cedric, happens to have the same representative as Sanyehi or Edu, I think I read the other day. So whilst Arteta can pick players out, it will be a bit of you're going to get what you're given.
Well, this is the acid test, and it's also, I'm interested to know what happened during the negotiations for Arteta to take the job and how much of a say he insisted upon in terms of player recruitment. Now, you know, I get you about the agents, and that was one of the reasons there was a lot of resistance to us going for the Wolves manager, because, you know, you get him, you're going to get his agents' players.
They're going to sign Portugal.
Effectively. So, well, we'll see what happens this summer.
Well, I'm incorrect in saying that the West Ham game was the first time Kier Jurabchin has been welcomed in the director's box.
Oh.
Kier Jurabchin, who, of course, Wenger would not go anywhere near. And, of course, he's famous for the Carlos Tevez Mascherano to West Ham thing, I think, was he?
Kier Jurabchin, that's the one.
He was in the director's box on Saturday against West Ham.
In all fairness, I think he has been there before. I mean, I think under Emery.
Bin Laden was at Highbury.
He's supposed to be an Arsenal fan.
Yeah.
And he's mates with Edu, is it? Or
Sanyehi? Edu especially.
Well, I mean, ultimately, you know, we're now not welcoming money in the sense that, you know, our beloved Yankees will sell them to people who give us more, but I mean, ultimately, you've got to get friendly with the big people now. So if we see the delectable Mino Raiola at the Emirates Stadium, then, well,
I don't think Arsenal can afford to do business with Mino. We can dream of those days. But yeah, point taken. All right, so I you need a summer. I'm assuming you type guys are going to give the same answer, or do you already have a feeling that they can deliver a title given time?
I've got huge doubts, because with Stan Kroenke as the owner, I'm concerned about where the club is heading. I think, in actual fact, I'm going to write on this issue for my next article in Laguna. I'm seriously worried that fans generally look at, oh, we want this player out, this player in, and even this coach, this head coach in, or that head coach out. I genuinely believe that Klopp would struggle to bring a title to Arsenal with Stan Kroenke as the owner. I have seen nothing positive whatsoever about the Kroenke ownership regime.
Well, I doubt that with regards to Klopp. In fairness, I've got a very, very odd passion of baseball. And my team, unfortunately, before they bought Liverpool, are the Boston Red Sox. And they've just committed a massive sin in baseball, in the sense that their best player, Mookie Betts, was coming to the end of his contract, and he was entitled to ask the most money in the league. And this is the Boston Red Sox, probably the second biggest brand after the New York Yankees. But the owners of Liverpool, John Henry & Co, the FSG, I think they're called, Fenway Sports Group, wouldn't be arrested by the money and let him go to get cheaper players. And if you look at the way that Liverpool have worked under FSG, I mean, you look at the likes of Coutinho and Luis Suarez, they've sold for an awful lot of money and then used not all of that money to buy three or four players. And you look at their attacking three. I mean, Mane costs like less than £30 million. Firmino, about £15 million. Salah, the Chelsea reject, is only about 30. I mean, they've managed their money brilliantly with Klopp in charge. So, I mean, Klopp at our place, well, I wouldn't have him because I think he's a wanker, but anyway.
There's another podcast in its own right. Yes.
It's an example of...
How are we going to discuss that?
It's an example of selling your best players for inflated sums and then reinvesting it astutely, which I think is the model which the Kroenkes are envisaging. Yeah. And, you know, it's. I mean, in all fairness, you know, we'll get onto central defenders later, but it seems like they might have done some good business with Saliba coming next.
So. Yeah, I agree with a lot with what Bernard says. I'm not sure that we win a league title in the next 10, 15 years.
Wow.
Because the money that City have got...
But hang on a minute.
It's just incredible.
It is, but they're being pulled back now because they did break the rules. And, you know, it shows if this is actually enforced that there is a point where you just cannot buy your way out of the rules.
Yeah.
So, effectively, Arsenal aren't that far behind. You know, I mean, I know Leicester is talked about as a one-off.
Yeah.
But my impression of the Premier League is it is getting to be a more competitive league.
Mm.
In which, I mean, look at Man United. Money doesn't guarantee that you're going to get...
They're always there, though, aren't they? They can outspend Arsenal by...
Yeah, but they're not necessarily going to buy success. Well, and that's where the manager is key for me. You know?
So I'm looking at it from a perspective of this year, where even Wolves are a better team than us and probably a better run club. And we're thinking, we've got to get through Wolves and they're only in sixth.
Yeah, but in all fairness...
How else are we going to get from sixth to the top?
In all fairness, we had half a season under Unai Emery, which should never have happened.
Yeah, true.
So, you know, we immediately had to start with a handicap in that.
But look at the players Wolves have got. This is just Wolves. That Jota.
Yeah, yeah.
Jimenez. Yeah. Traore. Unbelievable.
Well, they've got good players. They've done really well with them. And, I mean, it's a good example of how a club can grow.
Yeah.
But, you know, Arsenal could be that club.
Yeah.
You know, that's the point. Well, if we're down at that level. Anyway, let's move on now. And, I mean, because we're discussing this, I'll get another listener question in. Jonathan Houseman regularly sends a question in. With financial results showing a loss and the team requiring a rebuild in the summer market in various areas, do you think Arteta would have been given a promise of backing in the summer to fulfil his ambitions? I think this is a one-word answer. I mean, backing, what is backing?
Yeah.
Obviously, we're not going to get any external money. We're going to have to make do with what the club generate.
Well, the thing is, Arteta could change the players now and probably not suffer too great a difference in results.
Hmm.
I mean, He could bring in Guendouzi for a start, who doesn't seem to fancy much. Bellerin's got an injury, but I'm not sure he fancies Bellerin all that much. There are certain players he could bring, but he seems to have dropped Martinelli. Martinelli hardly ever features now under Arteta. So this promise of money, he might bring in more players that he's not going to play.
Right. Well, I mean, I think in all fairness to Jonathan, it is a black and white answer, and I think both Bernard and I know the answer is no.
I think he might be given a verbal promise, but he's been given no written guarantee whatsoever.
Well, at the end of the day, the club are run on self-sufficient lines. They've always maintained that publicly. It's always been the reality. It's not going to change.
No.
You know, I mean, the long and short of it is the ideal, the best possible scenario is Arteta gets every penny that the club earn to spend, and Kroenke's don't take money out.
Yeah.
So that's why, sadly, I think we're going to see, we're going to make a conscientious effort without making it publicly clear that the likes of Aubameyang and him wanting to renew on £300,000 a week, I think it's certain he'll be going. If we can find anyone who will pay 50% of Ozil's £350 a week, whether it's Besiktas, whether it's a Major League Soccer franchise, they'll go, because as far as I would have thought, if I was Arteta, thinking, okay, if for Aubameyang, it would be renewing his deal, no transfer fee, but £300,000 a week. That's £16 million a year. Over a two-year, maybe three-year contract, that's between £32 to £48 million we're saving. Ergo, I've got that £32 to £48 million to spend on a player, fee and wages. Ozil, with his £60 million a year contract, 1 year left on that, but get rid of it. We get the fee, whatever we get for him, £5 million maybe, and then his £60 million wages, that's up to £21 million to spend. You know, so if we can get rid of anyone with a remotely big salary, I mean, there are rumours that Roma made a permanent offer for Mkhitaryan in January of £10 million, and that was refused. I mean, you know, this could be Chinese whispers, we don't know. But based on his massive salary and the delectable Alexis Sanchez swap deal January before last, I mean, he's going to have a massive salary. So if we can somehow get to £5 and £10 million for him, plus save on those wages, you put all of those three sums together, that's a massive lot for Arteta to spend, plus whatever prize money.
Why did we turn that $10 million down, David? Why did we turn that $10 million down?
We don't know if it's true, do we? We're just relying on Daily Express rumours, which I'm sure are completely true. But
I'll just snap their hand off, $10 million.
Yeah. Oh, we're easy.
Yeah. Sure.
I, I think if Aubameyang doesn't renew his contract, he will be sold, because I believe the club have stated that players won't be allowed to leave for free, or younger players won't be allowed to leave for free anymore. You know, it was crazy losing Ramsey for not a single penny.
Yeah.
And I, you know, one thing I do believe the club has made a sensible decision over is saying they won't lose players for nothing anymore. So if Aubameyang doesn't renew his contract, he'll be sold this summer.
Oh, gotcha. As good as he is, he's got to go, hasn't he?
Yeah, that's right.
If the only reason he would stay is if his agent told him, play out your last year, and then you'll get the transfer fee in 2021.
Yeah.
Which I think, you know, I don't want to over-speculate, but I've heard that Ramsey's agent was actually quite difficult to deal with. Mm. And
in the sense, they kept moving the goalposts after the club provisionally agreed a term.
Yeah, I mean, basically, you know, he was, because of the Ozil deal, he was really pushing the as far as he could, and it wasn't a smooth process, and that's why as soon as Gazidis departed, the people that were left said, "No, we're not going to deal with this." So then you can go.
Yeah, don't blame them.
You know, because obviously by that time we were into the final season. The only way you'd have ever sold him would have been in January, and he was going to hang on at that time because it was. I mean, he's on 400k a week at Juventus because he got the transfer fee in his wages.
Yeah.
A rumour I have heard is that players were formally agreeing new contracts, but then not actually putting pen to paper in the expectation that they would then increase their salaries. You know, as agents, driven by agents.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't surprise me if Ramsey was doing something along those lines.
Or his agent.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I think he was...
agent.
I think more of the blame goes on the agent than Ramsey, in all fairness.
Yeah. And therefore, that's Harry ended up leaving for nothing.
Yeah.
Gone are the days when George Graham would just drive you up to Junction 15 Watford Gab Services and say, sign this, in the back of his car, you know.
Oh dear, right, so that's... So let's move on to another question from John Hossein, who asks, which of our young players would you keep, loan out, or sell? So, I mean, let's start with one who hasn't played too. I still consider him young. Okay, I'm going to just put him in that bracket. Ainsley Maitland-Niles.
Let's sell.
Say he's the oldest.
Sell.
Yeah.
You say sell.
Loan.
Loan.
Sell.
Right.
I had enough of him after the Europa League final last year.
Really?
I've never seen the poor kid play in his actual position. I think if you can tell me what that is.
No.
Right.
No, yeah, he won once against Forest in the FA Cup.
Is it fair to say that given Socrates is playing when Bellerin is injured at right back, that
Arteta doesn't fancy
him?
I'm pretty sure Arteta doesn't fancy him in the slightest.
Having said that, do we remember Arteta's early games when Maitland-Niles was playing in the right side? I thought he played okay.
Well, I'm not sure about that. I've never seen Maitland-Niles as a right back.
He's mentioned Maitland-Niles' attitude in a couple of press conferences.
Has he now?
The trouble with Maitland-Niles is he's not that good a passer of the ball. And if you can't pass it from right back, then you're not going to pass it well in midfield either. And I'm not sure he's a good enough passer to play in midfield.
Well, certainly for an Arteta player, that is the one thing which, you know, is non-negotiable.
I'd sell Willock as well, Kev. I'd sell
right,
Willock.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So you would
no assists this year, no goals.
He's had enough chances. 40-yard goal against Liverpool.
Apart from that, but you want to see him do that week in, week out.
Right.
He's not doing it.
Are you a Willock fan, Mr. Udo?
He's only a 19-year-old playing his first game in the first his first season in the first team in the Premier League side.
But the benchmark is Saka. He was just 18.
No, it is not a benchmark. Every of these young players is individual, and not all of them is going to be
as good as Saka.
I mean,
if the benchmark was Saka, you know, we would have won the World Cup.
So you would put him on loan, Willock?
Or maybe keep him for another year as a squad player.
Willock, I would be willing to loan out.
Right, so one sell, one potential loan, possibly keep, one loan.
What about Nketiah, Ken?
Well, we're going to go through the guys. I mean, you know, what are your thoughts about Eddie?
Keep. But not first team, squad player.
Right, so not a first choice.
Comes off the bench, plays in Europe, plays in the League Cup.
Right.
Gets a bit of meat on him, becomes a bit more robust.
Okay.
Learns how to knock a big defender off. Learns how to be involved in games for 90 minutes as well as score goals, then maybe keep. But squad player for the next year and then see how he goes.
Right. Bernard?
Yeah, I'd say the same. A squad player, but not first choice.
Right.
I agree completely. I think the main reason why he was brought back from Leeds was to see if there is anything in him, because I get the impression that Arteta's already decided that we will finally let Lacazette go to Atletico Madrid. And if we can get anywhere between £30-50 million plus save on his £140,000 a week, that's more money for my transfer fund.
Would you sell Lacazette and Aubameyang then, David?
Me personally, no. I get the impression this is what Arteta decided.
You think the club will?
Probably, absolutely. Yeah, I would have thought more money coming out, I think. Yeah.
Mind you, the best striker we've got coming through is that Balogun guy.
What? Who is this? Under 23s?
He scored hatfuls. And under 23s, every week he gets two or three.
Oh, based on that play, Paul Reed and Paul Shaw.
He scores even more goals than Nketiah has scored for the under 23s.
I've been tweeting old Gunner covers, and one of them has got Paul Dickov, actually, on the front, when we thought he was going to be the next big thing.
1990 World Cup, wasn't it?
Nketiah is a bit slight. Dickov was a bit short. This Balogun guy ticks all the boxes.
He's a big lad, is he?
He's a big lad, skinny, pace, great finish.
Barazite, can I mention Nicholas Barazite?
Barazite. The last player that scored as many goals as Balogun is getting for the under-23s was Daniel Malen. We let him go without giving him a sniff.
Good God.
And now we're looking to re-sign him for £48 million. So have a look at Balogun before you do
another
that.
Another one that got away. Serge Gnabry.
Young man, have a look at Balogun.
Right, Steve. I do take your point, 100%. Now, I think, Bernard, have we had you on Nketiah? Where are we now, actually?
Keep is
a squad player, but I don't see him as a first choice.
Right, Steve has thrown me for some reason. So anyway, let's go to Martinelli, another youngster. I mean, I think we know the answer to this, but in a way, the question isn't so much, are we going to keep him? But is he going to be a first-team starter for Premier League matches next season?
He'd be a first-team starter now if I was manager.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. On the left, with Aubameyang down the middle.
Yeah, he should be a starter.
Right. Yeah.
18 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Pace as well.
Yeah.
First year in the Premier League.
Listen.
Bear in mind he was playing second or third division in regional Brazilian football last year.
Yeah. Didn't get that knackered when he came on against Olympiacos.
Everyone else has been running around for 70 minutes.
Yeah.
Coming on fresh,
but
anyway.
But he needs to play more under Arteta, because otherwise he's going to get itchy feet and we'll sell him as well as Guendouzi.
Yeah.
And if we sell Martinelli and Guendouzi,
I'm led to believe that Martinelli is on a pretty long contract.
Yeah, good.
So, we've done that, so when we do sell him to Barcelona or Real Madrid, spoiler alert, we'll get close to nine figures for it.
Yeah. I can honestly envisage Martinelli leaving the club in 2021 for a significant fee, on the assumption that he does play quite a lot of matches next season and continues the form he's shown so far. Yeah.
He'll do an Anelka, as I believe it's referred.
Is it safe to say that Martinelli played better under Emery than he has done under Arteta?
No, I think it's about the same.
Can you not score all his goals under Emery?
Well, I mean, yeah, goals are one thing, and I agree, you know, that's what you want from your strikers. But, you know, he's played pretty well. Yeah. I mean, if you think of Portsmouth in the FA Cup, he was outstanding. Was it Bournemouth? I can't remember. Bournemouth.
Yeah,
he was outstanding that game. Yeah.
If we sell Guendouzi and Martinelli this summer, I will be in the Arteta must-go camp.
We're not going to sell Martinelli this summer.
And I will be as well. I've just got a new mate here.
Well, there's no way Martinelli is leaving the club until he's worth more money. All right? That's kind of the policy now. You buy from South America, you develop for a couple of years, you cash in. All right? And then you get another South American in. Yeah, that's how
it works. Like, you're doing a dodgy import thing with yourself, you know.
As we were saying earlier, not if you want to win the league in the next 10 years.
Well, it's building. It's incremental. What you're doing is you're improving position. You know, you're getting you're in your Europa League top six, then you're in your Champions League top four, then a couple of years down the line, you're actually in the top two.
Yeah.
And you're having to go for it.
Is one of these questions, how gutted were we when we lost to Olympiacos?
It's pretty obvious the answer to that, isn't it? Yeah. Oh, well, actually, no, there is a question related to that. I will get to that, but we've got another youngster left.
Yeah.
Who we're asking, is it, what is the question again? Is it to keep, loan, or sell?
Now, it's Matt Macy, isn't it?
Very good, David.
No, you know, he's 26.
The question is, he's got a year left on his deal.
Matt Macy?
No. I'm talking about the other, he's being ironic, all right? I'm talking about Bukayo Saka, just for your information.
Sarcastic.
Right. So Saka's got a year left on his deal. I mean, obviously, keep, yes.
Yeah.
The question is, can we?
I thought Saka had his best game for Arsenal on Saturday against West Ham. I know that's a pretty big statement, and he didn't get an assist or a goal, but his all-round play on Saturday was fantastic. He has to be a keep.
Yeah. He has to be a keep. The question is, at what stage is the lad going to sign up? Because I'm sure negotiations are already in progress.
Well, he's only just 18. You can't be giving him 50 grand a week, can you?
This is the question. Because is someone else going to say to his agent, we're going to pay your boy this much if either...
Well, they're like in Liverpool, aren't they?
This is what the press are telling us.
Yeah.
So, can we keep him? Is more the question here.
Well, this is another thing we're going back to earlier. Are we ever going to win the league in the next 10 years?
Mm.
If we're going to let the likes of Saka go to Man United or Liverpool, then clearly we're not going to win the league in the next 10 years.
Yes.
Mm. They're going to win it instead.
I mean, the problem is when you're posting financial losses, the easiest way to make sure you don't lose money is to sell a couple of players. So, you know, it's a worry for me, personally.
I mean, to my mind, I would just give Saka what he wants and sell Willock.
Right.
I would give Saka whatever he wants as well.
Okay.
Yeah. If you give me a Sophie's choice, you know, I'll drive Joe to the gate and wish him luck.
If we end up paying him 60, 70, 80 grand a week till he's 22, and then we get 100 million for him, we get the money back, and we've had 4 years.
I think that's called Bentoneritis. Yeah. You know, he'll change his shirt. Oh, his shirt number 77 at the moment. Yeah. There we go, that'll do. Yeah. 3.5 million a year.
What would you do, David? We haven't asked you yet. What would you do?
Keep him.
You'd pay the money.
Keep him, yeah.
Would there be a limit as to what you pay him then?
Oh, I would have to see the club's budget. Yeah.
I think it's got to be performance related, some of it. Bonus for certain targets. Yeah. Just in case he goes off the boil. Now, I'll get to this now for you, Steve. The Europa League exit. Was it a blessing in disguise? Or do you think Arsenal could have actually won that competition? Because if they could not have won it, the lack of fixture congestion, six games they don't have to play if they were to make the final, would aid the chase for a top four or five place. Also, give us a little more chance in the FA Cup. So, I mean, you know, I mean, we were gutted, but was it maybe the best thing?
Well, when we drew Wolves the following day, my first thought was, thank God we haven't got to go to Molineux in the Europa League.
Right.
They murder everyone up there.
Right.
And those three players I mentioned earlier, Jimenez, Jota, Traore, and the other midfield players whose names escape me at the moment, but score for fun, would have taken the piss out of us.
Right.
Especially if Arteta was stupid enough to go up there without Guendouzi. And possibly Martinelli, which he probably would have done. So, in a way, I'm not too unhappy because Wolves would have beaten us.
Right.
I was unhappy that we got knocked out, because I think we could have won. I think we're more than capable of beating on our day anyone left in that competition. So I think we could have won it.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree. And to be honest, I went in thinking it would be a formality, to be completely frank. Mm-hmm. But when they scored, I mean, all I could think about was Wayne Bridge in the Invincibles year. It was a proper... It was like being in Narm. Yeah, Dagger Narm.
Yeah,
mate. Yeah, but I agree with you. I mean, after last year's fiasco in the final, I mean, I know it will repeat itself, but in fairness, there are three better teams than us in that competition, and there's only so much luck you can have in the draw.
Is that three injured Wolves?
Four, then. Okay.
So the other three being Inter and...
Man United.
Ajax.
Oh, it's been locked out.
To be honest, I've forgotten
about it. It's history. Don't want to think about it.
Man United, Wolves.
Well, certainly I've put money on Inter winning that competition.
Yeah.
Put a bet on. I've also, in an optimistic mood, put a bet on Atletico to win the Champions League because the odds are just so long. And if they can get past Liverpool, frankly.
We'll have a better chance of winning the FA Cup now we're out.
This is definitely true. Which would be Europa League, you know, something. Let's talk about the defence. Let's just briefly do impressions so far of the loan signing with an option to buy, Pablo Mari.
I think he's pretty good without being world class. Okay. So good but not great.
Right.
We've only seen him twice though.
We've only seen him twice.
So he might be a bit conservative. The rest of the team might be a bit conservative. He's only played against West Ham and Portsmouth. I think he looks alright.
Yeah.
He's got the physical build to succeed.
Yeah.
Tall, slim, robust. Passes a nice long ball out forward diagonally. Yeah,
he uses the ball well.
Yeah. You've described exactly what I was about to say, I swear. A centre-half than we bought 10 years ago. And after two games, I thought that Scalacci had been a hell of a coup. Mm. And this guy that struck his way out of Sevilla, we've actually got a bargain here. And then, sadly, he played against footballers.
Yeah.
I mean, don't forget, this man, Manchester City, were more than happy to let him go.
Well, I'll tell you what. Tell you what, David, tomorrow night...
But having said that, Arteta, in theory, would have had some exposure to him before they made the decision to send him on loan.
Oh, as Wenger trained Scalacci as a youth man at Monaco, I think.
As well, you could say, as Wenger let Daniel Malin go to PSV.
Yes,
sure.
Okay.
So what do you know? I think if Mari plays tomorrow at City, we'll get an idea of how good he is.
No question at all. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, he may know some of how Aguero and co play, having trained against them.
There is that, actually, yes. Now, let's look at next season, the centre-backs. So, you know, option to buy Mari. One definite arrival will be William Saliba, who apparently, I mean, he was injured for a while, but when he has played... has impressed for St Etienne. He's developed even further.
He's been fantastic for St Etienne when he's played.
Right. So, I mean, the question is, in terms of the squad, you know...
They've got to the cup final, haven't they, this year? First time ever.
They have, yes. Well, not first time ever.
38 years.
Yeah, for a while. Someone's going to have to make room for... If they did secure Mari, we're going to keep you. Saliba's definitely coming. You know...
Well, I don't know about you, but let's preempt your question.
Mm.
We keep getting linked every day online, in the papers, in the media, with centre-backs.
Yes.
The guy from Red Bull, what's his name?
Upper
Meccano.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a guy called Tar, I think, T-A-H, who plays for someone.
Yeah.
And several other centre-backs.
Yeah.
Even John Stones, we're continually linked with.
Right.
Now, we've got Saliba coming in, we've got Mari potentially coming in,
yes.
We've got Mustafi, who's rejuvenated,
yes.
We've got Socrates, who's essentially a decent player.
Holding. Socrates has got a year left.
David Luiz, who has improved under Arteta.
Mavropanos is on loan in the German second division.
So how many more centre-halves do we need?
Is it back to the days of George Graham, I'm asking myself, because there are similarities, as
Andy,
I said.
Andy Lineker and Colin Pates. You have to say to yourself, in the summer, when it comes to transfers, I think we're well stocked at the back. please do not link us with fucking John Stones, Upamecano, John Tarr, the guy from Atletico Madrid, what's his name, the black fella?
It's the midfield player, isn't he?
Yeah,
Thomas Partey. He's a midfield player.
He's
not a defender.
Don't want to be linked with any more centre-backs. We've got enough.
Right. Well, the point being, some of them are going to have to go.
They are.
Even without signing anyone.
Yeah.
If Saliba's coming, you know, that's immediately an extra one. If he decides to keep Mari.
Yeah.
You know, I mean...
You were talking earlier about which players are going to, you know, keep, sell, put out on loan. I mean, whilst he, like Bellerin, I mean, before he had his recent really bad injury, looked like our best defender by a mile, but I think it's safe to say, unfortunately, that Holding will be leaving on loan, maybe on a permanent in the summer, which is really, really
which
sad.
Which is a shame.
Same with Chambers. Has he looked like a better player this
season?
Forgot Chambers, for God's sake.
That's 10 of them.
But he won't be at all, because he'll still be injured, I think.
Yeah, we won't get rid of him in the summer with his ACL.
He's a really good. They're all good players, to be honest.
But like you, I think Holding will be going.
It's a real shame that I really liked him.
Yeah, I did as well.
But is it that he can't play Arteta? I mean, he's not a great passer.
Well,
and that's the one thing that was very apparent in the Leeds match in which he was played. He did give the ball away. Yeah.
His first team game for a year.
Yeah.
So you have to forgive him that.
Well, I'm forgiving him, but will the Arteta?
He should do. He's been around, you know.
Because he's not been picked. It might have been a sub appearance, I think. But
ultimately, if we alert his agent, he's available for transfer, and the agent can, you know, pimp him to any of the other 91 professional clubs in the country. Will it be Chelsea and Manchester City you go after him, or will it be the likes of Palace?
Yes, exactly.
he's a Palace guy, if you ask me.
Yeah.
The Palace have probably let less goals in than us.
They've managed all right so far.
But having said that, people can go on about our centre backs. Since Christmas, which is now 2.5 months, we've let less goals in than anyone else in the Premier League.
Is that really true?
Yeah.
Good God Almighty.
Including Liverpool.
Wow. That is a stat. Let's just briefly move out of the centre to the right hand side. Bellerin has got groin trouble, and he has trouble crossing the ball. We are reliably informed by the
is that with regards to his groin and his balls, or
well,
is he going to be one of these players that never quite makes it back from the
this
ACL?
Is the question. Now,
same as Walcott, a player who had pace as a key part in his game.
Yeah. I mean, on this level, you know, at some point they're going to have to have a look at Cedric Soares just to sort of make that decision.
Really sad, Kev, that ACL, because if you look at Bellerin before his injury, and if you look at Holding before his injury, you probably wouldn't have swapped either of those players for anyone else in the Premier League.
Yeah.
Now, 12, 14, 15 months later, even after Holding's injury, you're thinking they're gone. Those injuries have killed them.
Sad. They have,
yeah.
That's
so sad.
A shame.
I think Holding will be sold. I'm not sure Bellerin will, but, you know.
Yeah, it does appear, though, that it does kill your performances after.
Yeah, that's right.
Right, so let's talk about the topic of the day, which is coronavirus and its impact on sports.
I've been coughing.
Well, I've had a chest infection for a while, but I know where it's come from. It ain't China.
I'm banned from work. Okay,
I've got it. Okay. And yet you've come along here tonight. Well, thank you so much, Steve. But anyway, there is the prospect of Premier League matches taking place behind closed doors. I mean, how's that going to feel?
Nothing. What's that going to achieve? It's going to feel terrible.
It's going to fulfil the fixture
list. It's going to feel terrible.
The competition will be seen to completion.
Yeah, it's tokenism.
It is, you're right. Pure tokenism, because they're not going to shut shopping centres.
No.
And, you know, get...
Not going to shut Frisby Park Tube, are they?
Yeah.
Not going to shut Oxford Circus. They're not going to shut Waterloo Station. They're not going to shut Victoria. They're not going to shut any of the major shopping complexes or supermarkets where people might handle a trolley.
Yeah, that's right.
20 or 30 people a day might handle the same trolley.
Yeah.
God knows what germs are on those handlers on the trolley. No one ever disinfects them every time, do they?
No, that's right.
A football match, you go into a ground, you don't touch anything. You don't. You just watch the game and leave again. It's pure tokenism.
Yeah. Couldn't agree more. And I will be fuming if they do stop people attending games, because the last home game I missed was the 1-0 win against Liverpool when Bergkamp scored that diving header. When was that?
God,
I think it was in black and white. 90s?
Yeah. No,
late
90s,
yeah. Yeah, mid-90s.
Yeah, January 92, yeah. I think it was.
Bergkamp wasn't at the club in 92.
So 96.
Some 2002.
Right, okay. Mm.
So it's 18 years since I've missed a home game.
Wow.
Yeah. If you look at the investigation into on Monday, the DCMS held their meeting to discuss it with legal, across all sports, league organisers, but most importantly, members of the broadcasters. I mean, ultimately, we live in a capitalist society, and because the television rights are up for tender again this coming summer, if you show live Premier League games in front of an empty stadium at the moment, that's going to take the value of that down. So they're going to try and find a way. I mean, I'm going back to pick up my dad after this, because we're going to Cheltenham tomorrow, when you've got 120,000 people from all over Europe in the same place. But it's in the open air, it's absolutely fine. Yeah, all right, okay, that's fine. Ultimately, there won't be games behind closed doors going in places.
Well, there is in Italy, there is in France,
let me
there
finish
is in Spain.
Let me finish the sentence. In this country, because the way you're going, thank you very much.
But why not in this country?
Hang on, hang on. Has he finished?
Just explained. Steve, is the hearing aid working?
No.
But
why not in this country?
Right, let him tell you.
I just explained. Yeah, because ultimately there is more money to be made by making sure the games go ahead with an audience, because the audience there are going to spend more money in the ground. The tourists who turn up 10 minutes late and take selfies and everything and go and buy all the merch.
But surely you can't say that to the government, can you? When they say you've got to play behind closed doors.
I know you're a Tory voter, but
you can't say...
Well, hang on a minute.
Yeah.
Does the media control the government, Steve?
No.
I think historically...
I think Rupert Murdoch may historically, have a disagreement with
you. You might be surprised.
I'd love it if the media controlled the government, but they don't.
Right, okay. That's one for our political podcast.
Sure you know.
But suffice to say, it's not as clear-cut as you'd like to
the
think.
The DCMS deciding whether they were going to postpone or rearrange any sports fixtures called broadcasters to be there. If you could tell me what broadcasters have to do with the organisation of sport other than money, I'd be very surprised.
Well, I hope you're right, David. I really, really hope you're right.
Yeah. I do as well.
Because I think this in all my 64 years of being alive, if they order football matches to be closed behind closed doors because of a virus that may or may not kind of kill people, and apparently the only people that die at the moment are all over 80.
Yes,
over 70.
And they've all got some underlying other illness.
Yes.
I'm not being callous about that, but it's a fact that if you're a... under 80 and you don't have an underlying illness, you're unlikely to die of this thing, then why are we closing football grounds when everything else is allowed to stay open?
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Okay. Yeah. I also read that 40 people in this country have died of the normal flu, and only two have died of this new thing.
Yeah. Apparently 135 people a day die of ordinary flu.
I can completely believe that. It is interesting how this has developed.
We're not closing football grounds because people might die of ordinary flu, are we?
No, exactly.
There is an element of hysteria, but at the same time, the one thing I would have to say about this particular virus is potentially it may be more contagious than standard viruses.
Yeah.
But anyway, but surely, I'm not an expert. All I say to everyone out there listening is make sure your immune system is in good shape.
If it is contagious, Kevin, well, let's just all have it. Let's just all get an immune system to it.
Yes.
Let's build up an immunity to it. Yeah. And then let's just see the back of it.
Okay, well, we're going to move on from Corona in the hope that we can still attend Arsenal matches. And finish with... The next weekend is the FA Cup, and we are going to visit
Sunday.
Sheffield 22nd, United.
1:30.
Oh, is it 22nd? BT so it's Sport. Not next weekend. Next weekend, no, we're away to Brighton. Weekend, right?
Yeah,
so
that's right.
Southampton.
Sheffield United is the 22nd.
Looking ahead to the quarterfinal at Bramall Lane. Memories of the last three meetings in this competition with Sheffield United. 1999, a replayed game, even though the first game was an Arsenal win, 2-1. Carney scored the controversial goal. 2003 at Old Trafford, a semi-final with that Seaman save. And 2005, a 0-0 draw at Bramall Lane with a penalty shootout.
So, we won the FA Cup twice out of those three seasons.
Interesting. The other question, though, is, are Sheffield now a much more difficult team to beat than the last three times?
Oh, of course.
So,
absolutely.
Are we optimistic?
Yeah,
I am optimistic, although I fully accept Sheffield United are a strong team these days. And I've got to give credit to their manager. I think he's done a fantastic job in turning Sheffield United into what they've become this season. But I'm still optimistic, and I think we'll get through.
Yeah,
we just have to be careful of corners, free kicks, long balls into the box. We need to be in our middle. That's a game for Mari.
Right. Interesting.
It should be a very different game to a league game against them, because obviously you get a point for a draw in the league. Am I correct in saying that there aren't any replays for the quarterfinal or semi-final now?
Yes. No.
So straight to extra time and penalties. They're going to have to line up a different way, rather than, you know, we'll take a nil if we want, because, you know, they're going to want the points more than us, so they're going to press. And when they do that, we'll just catch them on the breakaway, win a corner, do it that way. Both teams have to attack. And I think we've got a better attacking team in Sheffield, but whether our defence will hold up, I don't know. As long as they've got Paddy Kenny in goal, who breaks two of his ribs, so he has to dive on the right-hand side every single time, and we know how to score each of the penalties, that'll be fine.
Well, that's one of their strong points. They've actually got Man United's keeper in goal, haven't they?
Yeah, Henderson.
Yes.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of talk from Man United fans that they want him in goal next year instead of De Gea.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's not going to be easy, but given the other teams we could have got, I mean, would you rather have gone to Leicester, Manchester United, Manchester City, Chelsea, Newcastle even? I would much rather go to Sheffield United.
Well, I mean, if it does go to penalty shootouts, obviously the last time we played them, that's how
Newcastle's
it ended.
An interesting one, Kev. City.
City
won eight out of the last nine domestic trophies, is it? Something like that?
Yeah.
Newcastle haven't won a trophy for donkey's years. They're at home in the quarter final of the FA Cup. If they win, they go to Wembley. You imagine what St James's Park's going to be like that day.
Right.
Pissed. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll watch that one with interest as well.
Yeah.
And the main thing is that Spurs are out. So
yeah. Brilliant.
The chances of them
podcast about that.
Winning. Well, we'll cover it next time around. Let me just briefly. How are they doing? Someone else will have to check, because my phone is on Do Not Disturb. I don't think the actual.
What are we checking? We're still recording.
Yeah, Tottenham are doing.
We are still recording. We're just seeing an update.
We're still
on
recording.
Spurs. We are recording.
Berlin, would you sign the guy from Norwich, Cantrell?
Sorry to interrupt. At this point, it's RB Leipzig 2, Tottenham Hotspur.
No. So I think it's fair to say.
Hang on.
You've got to remember that was the score probably at the Ajax game at this stage of the match. So let's not get too excited.
Yeah.
But anyway, sounds good to me at this
Norwich.
Point.
Would you sign him?
Yes, I would
as well.
Yeah.
Right. So optimistic
good
about Sheffield United.
Player. Brilliant. Yeah. I'd have him. Yeah. It'd be my first signing of the summer.
Yeah.
Right, gentlemen, so we have been going for the best part of an hour, a bit more than that. So I am going to now get to the wrap-up, and it will be Gunnar plug time, because the main news has to be that we are now a little over a fortnight away from the deadline to raise 1,000 advanced subscribers for the Gunnar next season to ensure we can continue publishing. We're currently on issue 282, and 283 will hopefully not be the final ever, but if we fall short of the 1,000, it will be. So, with many thanks to those who have already signed up, either renewers or new subscribers, we're asking the rest of you to consider digging deep and spending £30 to receive 6 issues through your letterbox next season. That is less than the cheapest adult seat to watch an Arsenal Grade B game, such as Watford or Newcastle. And you'll be far more entertained by a 68-page issue of quality supporter writing every 6 weeks during the 2021 season. A link to the subscription sign-up page can be found at the top of our homepage on our website, onlinegunner.com. Issue 283 itself comes out for the match against Norwich on the first weekend in April, which hopefully will be played in front of actual supporters and will be the final one this season, although, God willing, we will be back. Over to you, good people, for that. And to wrap up this evening, as ever, a reminder that you can contact us regarding anything to do with the podcast via Twitter at GoonerPodcast and email goonerpodcast@gmail.com. Many thanks to the questions and topics submitted for today. And with that, it is goodbye from David.
Goodbye.
Bernard.
Goodbye.
And Steve.
Goodbye.
We will be back in April with another monthly edition. And for those that can't wait, you can follow the more regular videoed podcasts offered on the Gooner Fanzine TV Tube channel hosted by Leif Youssef. And I was actually on last night's recording, so when that comes out, you can indulge yourself on my opinions there where I was not the host. So with that, this is your host, Kevin, which is saying goodbye and thank you for listening.
La-di-da-di-da, la-di-da-di-dee, all good friends and jolly good company. Way!